Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington.
And I'm Ayan Bior, also in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Monday, December 21st, 2015. Members of the SPLM-IO team are back in Juba.
They have just arrived. We received them here in Juba International Airport, and it is a positive step toward the implementation of the peace agreement.
And what do ordinary citizens think about the return of the armed opposition to South Sudan?
Their coming is really an advantage because you see, when you try to see the economic of ours, it is due to the lack of an agreement between the rebel leader and our government.
Their coming for the community is a good thing because the peace brings a lot of things.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus.
After several delays, a 15-member advanced delegation of the SPLM-IO opposition arrived in the capital today. The team's arrival is aimed at jump-starting the overdue implementation of the peace agreement signed by the government and the SPLM-IO back in August. We have a number of reports for you, beginning with the advanced team's arrival at Juba International Airport amid tight security. A government delegation was there to greet the team, led by MP Paul Akol, a top member of the SPLM ruling party. Akol called the members brothers.
I would like to welcome them to the capital of the Republic of South Sudan, Juba, and tell you that you are welcome home and you are welcome to your capital
city. Thank you.
As a government, we are happy to receive them, and at this juncture, I would like to reiterate our commitment for the implementation of the peace agreement and for the reconciliation of the people of South Sudan, the development of war-affected areas, and final peace in our country. We are happy to receive them.
Ramadan Hassan Laku spoke at the airport on behalf of the SPLM-IO advance team.
I want to assure the people of South Sudan that we start today the implementation of agreement. That is why we are here now. We came with the first flight and let the people of South Sudan know that we are here now. The first advance team.
Akach Ajeng, chairperson of the South Sudan Civil Society Alliance, also welcomed the arrival of the advance team.
They have just arrived. We received them here in Juba International Airport, and it is a positive step toward the implementation of the peace agreement.
And Jane called it an important day.
It is a joyful day, having seen that the IO and the government are committed to implement the peace agreement. It has been our feel as South Sudan Civil Society that they must come to the table, negotiate, and take dialogues as the mean of solving the problem in this country.
The 15-member delegation flew back from Pagak via Gambela in Ethiopia. At least 150 members are expected to arrive in Juba at some point today. But Akol says the other team traveling via Khartoum had landed in Gambela yet to catch a flight, though, to Juba due to technical reasons. It is the first time SPLM-IO officials have returned to Juba since the fighting broke out in December of 2013, leading to the deaths of more than 10,000 people. Waki Simon Wudu prepared that report in Juba.
South Sudanese opposition lawmakers and officials with the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission are welcoming today's arrival of the rebels' advance team in Juba. Maguma Davis Wakarunj has this report for VOA from Juba.
Opposition politicians applauded the SPLM-IO advance team's arrival to Juba, calling it a significant step towards implementing the peace agreement signed in August by the leaders of the two warring parties. Andrew Okony Ayom, chief whip for South Sudan's main opposition party, the SPLM-DC, describes the arrival as a golden opportunity to finally turn things around in South Sudan.
People have been waiting for them to come, and their coming actually is overdue, should have been earlier a bit. This will change the policies in the country. It will change the people's feelings among themselves. And also it is a step towards confidence building in a broken society like South Sudan.
Okony says South Sudanese suffered greatly from the nearly 2 years long conflict and says implementing the peace deal is the only way to end the suffering of innocent civilians. He says now that the opposition's advance team is in Juba, they should negotiate in good faith. He also challenged the SPLM-IO to reach out the common man to understand their suffering. Opposition lawmaker Bol Tobe Madut, who is Secretary for Parliamentary Affairs with the opposition, Sudan African National Union Party, says now that the advance team has arrived, he is now optimistic that the agreement will be implemented.
The ordinary person knows now that there is no warring parties. Once they know the SPLM-IO they're here, they will know the family of South Sudan is all together now within the country. And we can all now face the difficulties and the challenges and the development that we need for our nation together.
Ali Velsh, spokesperson of the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, or JMEC, says people can now start to see what they have been hoping for, an end to war.
It's symbolically very important that we can now say truly implementation is taking place and is moving forward with the necessary pace. It's been a difficult process, as you know, to get everybody back here, to get agreement for all of the various steps that are required. This is the start of the return. It's not the end of the return.
JMEC, which is headed by former Botswana President Festus Mogae, is responsible for overseeing the implementation of the agreement and the permanent ceasefire in South Sudan. JMEC is composed of officials from the warring parties, society groups, and representatives from IGAD countries. It will supervise the ceasefire monitoring mechanism and the constitutional review process, among other things. Verja says now that the opposition is here, the two sides will get down to business.
If we really want to make a gift to the people of South Sudan in this Christmas season, the best gift would be one of accelerated implementation and moves towards peace.
The two parties are expected to begin talks in Juba tomorrow. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinj in Juba.
And citizens across the country are welcoming the arrival of the armed opposition's advance team, saying it will boost efforts to implement the August peace agreement. Mike Letit has more for VOA from Wau.
Here in Wau, citizens say now that the SPLM-IO advance team has arrived, it means the warring parties are taking the right steps towards implementing the peace deal. Michael Mangong, a traditional chief in Wau's Bilfam residential area, says the advance team's arrival marks an end to the conflict, which has displaced hundreds of thousands of people.
Their arrival will help in implementing the peace agreement, which will allow a bit of freedom to citizens. Right now, the situation is not encouraging to people at all. People were waiting for stability so they can live in peace.
35-year-old Christina David Villario is a mother of four who says she hopes that the arrival of the rebel group's advance team will lead to change that improve the lives of ordinary citizens.
I hope their arrival will bring a lot of changes in our situation. People are now preparing for Christmas. Let them come and we celebrate both events together. We need peace and stability in the coming days.
Another Wau citizen, Stephen Robot, says their arrival will allow South Sudanese to celebrate this Christmas with hope that the coming year will be peaceful.
All South Sudanese have been waiting to see them. They are coming back home. And it shows also the commitment for the two parties for implementing the peace agreement. That means ending the suffering of South Sudanese people. Also, it coincides with the Christmas season, where the moment of joy. And for me, it adds to the joy of South Sudanese that they are hoping for. They need to live in peace and harmony.
In Nimole, near the border with Uganda, citizens are also welcoming the arrival of the armed opposition's advance team. Simon Peter Moga, a border rider in Nimole, says he too believes their presence in Juba means the peace agreement will be implemented, bringing an end to the economic hardships so many people are facing in South Sudan.
Their coming is really an advantage because you see, when they try to say the economic of ours, it is due to the lack of an agreement between the rebel leader and our government. So when they came back, so the economy of ours, like this one, the rate of changing of our money, it will be fine. So that's why you may say all the citizens of South Sudan are really experiencing a lot of problems because of that economic problem.
Nimole residents Ezerka Benson also says their arrival could be a big step toward peace and development.
The agreement itself is all about peace. So they are coming for the community, a good thing, because the peace brings a lot of things. Mobilization for the community, the ruling itself is going to be as normal as before.
Another resident, Moses Amacha, says their arrival means those who run to foreign countries can come back home.
I see the negotiation between the rebel and the government is okay. We suffer a lot. We face a lot of problems from outside the country.
Amacha says the people of South Sudan are tired of living in exile. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Wau.
Jacob Achak and Nimele contributed to that report.
As the first batch of the SPLM-IO advance team arrives in Juba, internally displaced persons, or IDPs, living at the UNMISS Protection of Civilians site in Juba are calling on both the government and SPLM-IO to consider their suffering. They say they have lost all of their material possessions during the war, but they say that is nothing compared to the loss of loved ones. VOA fellow Tito Justin spoke to some IDPs in Juba and has this report from Washington.
Reactions from IDPs on the arrival of the rebels' advance team in Juba are mixed. While some are expressing happiness, others say they worry about how they are going to start a new life when they are told to return home. Gatwich Wall, who hails from Upper Nile State, has been with his family at the protection of civilian site in Juba since the conflict erupted in late 2013. Wall says he and other IDPs at the camp had been depending on limited humanitarian aid from the UN and its partner agencies for the past 2 years, and he says what they are getting is not enough. Wall says he hopes the coming of the SPLM-IO advance team to Juba means the end of their suffering.
I will see the IDPs not suffering again because everybody will go back home. And I will see the people of South Sudan in all parts of the state. There will be no more fighting because if the two leaders come together again, the political parties come together again, this may stop the bloodshed in South Sudan.
Kubom Kubong is a community leader at the UN Protection of Civilian Site. Kubong says most of the IDPs are widows and orphans. He says they have been traumatized by the conflict and in desperate need of psychological counseling as they try to resume their normal lives.
If it means that the physical section is implemented, that means we have to go out and we don't know where we will go. We don't know what the government, the rebels, the international community will do for us because we have nothing at hand.
Last week, IDPs at UNMISS Protection of Civilian Site in Juba said they are disappointed that it has now been 2 years since the conflict broke out and they are still living in a camp. They said living in the protection of civilian site is like living in prison. Rebecca James, who has two children with her at the camp, says she doesn't know where her husband is since the conflict erupted. She calls on the warring parties not to look backward for the sake of the citizens suffering in the country.
So we're just telling them to feel continue.
Rebecca says she wants both sides to continue working for peace until people peacefully coexist like it was before the fighting broke out. More than 185,000 IDPs are still living in six different UN protections of civilian sites across the country. According to the UN, more than 2.3 million South Sudanese have fled their homes since December 2013 in search of safety and protection. Of that amount, more than 650,000 people fled to Ethiopia, Sudan, Uganda, and Kenya. For VOA News, I am Tiro Justin in Washington.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. What do NGOs think the arrival of the rebels' advance team means for the future of South Sudan? Find out when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what's the best present you've ever received?
My best gift, it is that when my father have been decided to come to be with my mother, it is that gift which I received together, when we are together.
It is when I first Sudan school certificate. So that once I was awarded with a gift by a Minister of Education in United States Bintu when I was in Sudan.
The best present I ever received was a jewels box from my mom that had princesses on.
The best gift I have ever received. It's a book. A book. You know, education is like, I would say to the late Madiba once say, education is the best weapon we can use against poverty.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Before the fighting broke out, the ruling SPLM party was accused of widespread corruption. One Washington, D.C.-based nonprofit says South Sudan could be losing millions of dollars every year to corruption and the mismanagement of finances by government officials. Justine Fleischner, a policy analyst with the Enough Project, says now that the SPLM-IO officials are back in Juba, significant progress can be made on implementing the peace deal and ending corruption.
South Sudan actually has some of the most robust rules and regulations on things like revealing beneficial owners of different companies and public disclosure rules for officials that are working in the Ministry of Petroleum to ensure that there are no conflicts of interest. A lot of it is just about, A, making sure that civil society groups are aware of what already exists in these rules and regulations and how they can use those, and then also ensuring that there's space for civil society and for journalists to operate in the country to report on instances of alleged corruption without retribution or retaliation against them. And that's something that needs to be prioritized in diplomatic circles. The report talks about sources of conflict financing. It talks about policy tools and interventions that are available to the international community to push the economy towards peace as a whole, rather than just talking about kind of the political and the diplomatic side of things.
And could you give us examples of what those policy tools and intervention tools are that that people can use to stop the illicit economy in South Sudan?
The Department of Treasury in the United States has a financial crimes enforcement network. There's also the Department of Justice has a new bureau for kleptocracy. And these are some of the bilateral tools that exist in addition to kind of more multilateral efforts to tackle corruption, money laundering, and other activities like this.
And in the report, you wrote about war profiteers. Could you tell us what that's about?
These are individuals and entities that seek to profit from the turmoil created by conflict, whether that is providing loans and support in exchange for access and entitlements later on. It could be from doing arms trafficking or providing other sources of material or financial support to the warring parties. And so this is something that needs to be investigated further. Specific individuals and entities have to be looked into in order to ensure that there aren't individuals that are actually profiting from the continuation of the conflict.
The first batch of SPLM-IO advance team has landed in South Sudan today. Is there a chance that the leaders, both political leaders as well as IGAD Plus and JMEC, are better positioned to stop the flow of illicit economies in South Sudan?
Now that we are beginning to see the parties return to Juba to make progress in implementation, can we also now move forward on the ambitious reform agenda laid out in the peace agreement with oversight and accountability from JMEC? And so that remains to be seen. But this is absolutely a critical first step in that direction.
That was the Enough Project's Justine Fleischner speaking to me earlier today from New Jersey.
A second class of nurses and midwives who graduated from the Juba College of Nursing and Midwifery earlier this month say they're ready to address some of South Sudan's biggest health challenges, including its high infant and maternal mortality rate, which is among the highest in the world. Waki Simon Wudu has more for VOA from Juba.
Graduate Kiden Annette Simon obtained a diploma in midwifery from the Juba College last week. Annette says she is confident she can handle all kinds of pregnancies.
The skills that I've acquired, I'm given more knowledge in managing complications, especially during pregnancy, labor and delivery, and the postnatal period.
Annette says she now has the knowledge to save the lives of mothers and their unborn babies by providing counseling and helpful tips to pregnant women.
I make sure that, like in the field, if I'm where there's We don't have complex care. Have to report the patients in time to prevent death. I make sure that I have to give health education to the mothers during antenatal period so that they will prevent delivering from home. They have to come to the health facility.
Barjoko Dutbol also graduated from the Juba College of Nursing and Midwifery last week with a diploma in nursing. He says his skills can help him administer medication to patients, tend to the sick, and advise patients to take their medicine.
The skill that I have acquired, then I have to apply it to my community through giving health education, treating people, giving nursing care to the patient who are being sick, and also some of the people who are being sick also mentally and socially. I can also advocate it for a patient who is sick.
Ball and Annette are among the 83 health workers who graduated from the Juba College since its establishment in May 2010. 113 nurses and midwives are available in the country. South Sudan had only 3 professional midwives when the Comprehensive Peace Agreement was signed in 2005, which ended decades of civil war between Juba and Khartoum. The war deprived many citizens access to education at the time. The Juba College of Nursing and Midwifery, which is funded by the United Nations Population Fund, the UN Development Fund, and various donor countries, says only 14.2% of deliveries across South Sudan are attended by skilled birth attendants, and the cesarean section rate is less than 0.5%. South Sudan has the highest maternal mortality rate in the world. According to a 2012 report by the Geneva-based think tank Small Arms Survey, 1 in 7 South Sudanese women will die in pregnancy or childbirth, often because of infections. Janet Michael is the director of nursing and midwifery at the South Sudan Ministry of Health. She says the government must focus on reducing the maternal and infant mortality rate by training more nurses and midwives. Michael says the budget of the Ministry of Health should be doubled in order to train more healthcare workers. And she says the salaries of nurses and midwives must be increased to attract more healthy workers. Michael says midwives across South Sudan face tough choices.
I wish that package could be improved so that our nurses and midwives will be motivated and that they will not be looking for other means to make ends meet so that they can support their families happily. And the other is that also the working environment, which we would like also to be improved.
Michael says the Ministry of Health must find ways to convince health workers to work in government health facilities. Otherwise, she says trained nurses and midwives will likely search for greener pastures with the international aid agencies who pay better salaries. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
This past year, Africa saw elections, coup attempts, constitutional changes, and peaceful transfers of power. From Burundi, which is still dealing with violence and unrest after its president decided to run for a third term, to Tanzania and Nigeria, which both saw peaceful transitions of power. It was a year of setbacks and gains for democracy on the continent. VOA's Jill Craig reports from Nairobi.
2015 was a year of ups and downs for democracies across Africa. Nigeria saw its first democratic transition of power in April, when former General Muhammadu Buhari defeated incumbent President Goodluck Jonathan. The polls ended 16 years of one-party dominance. In Tanzania, President Jakaya Kikwete stepped down after his constitutionally mandated 2 terms. John Magufuli was peacefully elected in October after a spirited campaign. And the former public works minister shoveled leaves and trash to mark Independence Day after canceling the usual festivities as part of efforts to abolish waste and reduce poverty. Benji Ndolo is the founder and director for the Organization for National Empowerment, ONE.
The new president, Magufuli, has just started on a wonderful, wonderful note, full of energy, full of optimism, full of action, less talk. So this, again, is very heartening, especially for countries like Kenya that are just next door and for the region. Uganda goes to elections in about another month and a half.
Burkina Faso dodged a coup attempt in September and went on to elect the country's first new leader in 27 years. It was a successful end to the transition after mass protests ousted longtime president Blaise Compaoré in October 2014. Sociologist Fahiraman Rodrigue Kone from Ivory Coast.
Je dirais ce que nous pouvons voir et les enseignements que nous pourrons tirer.
He says what we see in terms of democratic progress is the rise of a responsible society, what he calls a society of citizens. He says the quality of the political offer also depends on demand, and that is the missing link that he says is emerging. But for these highlights, there were also lows. Burundi descended into chaos in April after President Pierre Nkurunziza made his bid for what critics say is an unconstitutional third term in office. After a May coup attempt, protesters taking to the streets, and bloody police crackdowns, Nkurunziza was re-elected in July under a haze of suspicion. Nearly 200,000 people have fled the country. The U.S. has put sanctions on at least four senior officials, both from the government and from the coup organizers, while the U.N. Security Council has condemned killings and torture. And still, the violence continues. As it has in South Sudan, where tens of thousands have been killed and more than 2 million forced to flee their homes since civil war flared up 2 years ago. Supporters of both President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar have accused each other of violating a ceasefire agreement. The peace deal called for an interim administration to be in place by late November, but these plans were delayed. The new target for a transitional government is mid-January. Protests turned violent in the Republic of Congo this past year as President Denis Sassou Nguesso held an October constitutional referendum to remove a two-term limit and the age ceiling of 70. He won with 92% of the vote, raising suspicion among international observers. And in the Democratic Republic of Congo, President Joseph Kabila is accused of postponing the presidential election, originally set for November 2016, and attempting to amend term limits. Rwanda voted a resounding yes with 98.4% of the vote in a recent constitutional referendum to allow President Paul Kagame to run for a third term in 2017 and possibly two more after that. However, Eric Manga, a researcher at the University of Nairobi, thinks Africa would be better off building up institutions.
It is high time Africa should forget about this issue of laying their destiny with individuals. We know that we'll always have good ones and bad ones. You know, if you have stronger institutions, we will be in a position to take the right path.
2016 will be another test for African democracies, with key votes expected in at least 9 countries. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
That's our show for this Monday. We leave you with the song Let Me Go by Talese.
Talese with the song Let Me Go. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
And I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. We're glad you could be here with us. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America.